This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit is brought to you by Bluehost, one of the biggest and best companies for your website or blog. For just $6.95 per month, they offer great service, great support, and setting up your blog, if you've never done that before, couldn't be easier. It's just one click of a button, so you can focus on your content instead of having to worry about technology. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon store. Click on the link on our website, thehobbit.sqpn.com, before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Where to begin?
Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of Secrets of the Hobbit. I miss this jingle. I miss the sounds of this podcast. I missed you as a listener, and I missed my co-host. Dave is not joining us today, but Inge is joining us, and we hope, of course, to get Dave back in future episodes as well. But yeah, he's a busy man. In the meantime, he got married, and well, that of course is changing everything. But we do hope that he's going to join us. But Inge, so glad to see you on the show again.
Hello, Father.
So the reason that we're starting today with a second series of The Secrets of the Hobbit is, of course, that filming has resumed in New Zealand. Actually, this week, I was looking at the Facebook page of Peter Jackson, and he writes, on Monday, back on the set for our last Hobbit pickups, our last ever Tolkien pickups, in fact. It's going to be an intense few weeks, but we're looking forward to shooting some powerful scenes with our great cast. Our next blog is coming soon. And he posted a what looks like almost a photo bomb, where you see Gandalf looking all serious, and then he is Peter Jackson's in the background, kind of looking goofy into the camera. So, funny photo. And well, of course, as you know, we've been not producing any new episodes for a while, and this was because after our mega, mega big review of the movie, there was not much to report. There was no news, at least not anything big coming from New Zealand, from Wellington. And I think that even Peter Jackson must have taken a break, and a lot of the actors were doing other stuff. And so we've been waiting for new developments, and we've had the release, of course, of the DVDs and the Blu-rays. But we figured that, you know, since there wasn't any, you know, director's commentary on those DVDs or Blu-rays, they're keeping that, of course, for the double dip event of the extended editions of the first Hobbit movie. You can wait for that. I mean, that's what they've always done. That's what they will always do. So I think that the DVDs and the Blu-rays came just with a lot of the material that we have already discussed in this show. So that wasn't very newsworthy either. And so we've just been waiting for something to happen in New Zealand, aka Middle Earth. And this week was it. We got the word that that they would start filming pickup shoots. And so that is a great occasion to pick up the pace with our podcast as well. And well, if you're a new listener, one of the things that we do here on the show is to talk about the recent news, but also to discuss the implications for this story. Because even though we know the book and we've all read it, and some of you have even gone in depth reading all the extra material and the Silmarillion and all those other works, great works of Tolkien, we still don't really know how Peter Jackson will take all that material and bring it to the movie screen. And of course, with the first movie, we've seen that he has made some important changes. He's added a lot of material, and he will undoubtedly do the same for this second movie, The Desolation of Smaug. He pronounces it Smaug, I noticed in one of his videos.
That's almost cool. Sounds German. That's how I would pronounce it.
Yeah, because you're German, right? Originally.
Sort of.
You now live in the Netherlands, but German is your...
I pretend I'm Dutch.
Right. So Smaug. I kind of like the sound of that. Smaug. Sounds evil. Definitely evil. So The Desolation of Smaug is the middle film. And of course, that brings about a lot of complications in terms of storytelling, because it's kind of, you can't really wrap up the story yet. That's for the third movie. However, we do know that if this movie is going to be about Smaug and about the treasure and about Bilbo facing Smaug, that is kind of the highlight of the story. And so when is the second movie going to end? How are they going to bridge to the third movie? How are they going to keep up the interest of the audience? What do you think, Inge?
Well, they are already teasing us. So they showed a little bit of Smaug at the end of the first movie. He opened his eyelids.
Just his eye.
So this little bird woke him up.
Mm-hmm.
So and of course they also introduced another villain. So I think that's also one of the tricks to keep us interested in the second movie.
And that's the white orc.
Yeah, the pale white orc.
Yes.
And I can see them. I don't want to go too much into speculation, but I can see how they would use that, for example, because they have to enter Mirkwood now, and that they also will be hunted by those orcs who are mad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, and I think that's one of the interesting things that Peter Jackson did in the first movie. He actually created a number of parallel storylines. And so that gives him a lot of flexibility as to the second movie. He can just kind of wave these together and move from one place to another. We also know that there's this whole subplot of the White Council and Dol Guldur and all that stuff. So I really like what he did in the first movie, even though it kind of went off script or off canon in a certain way. There were elements in that story that weren't part of the original Hobbit book, but he makes it possible to create a very interesting storyline in the second movie, even though it won't have that natural ending that he would have had he just left it at two movies. So it's going to be interesting. We're going to talk about that a little bit more and look at what Peter Jackson himself says about the second movie and the way he is going to tell this story and keep us interested. But first, I want to mention important news from a while ago that we still want to talk about here. And that is this online event that was part of the, let's say, the PR around the Blu-ray and the DVD movies. So from what I've heard, because I didn't buy those movies on Blu-ray yet, because I'm waiting for, of course, as any true fan would do, I'm waiting for the extended versions with the director's commentary. But if you had bought those movies, the first movie on DVD or on Blu-ray, you got a code with which you could log in and see a live video from New Zealand, hosted by Peter Jackson himself. And of course, you needed to buy the discs to get that code. A lot of fans have watched it. I don't know how many people logged in, but I was pretty amazed to see that they were able to cater to all those different people. That must have cost them a huge amount of bandwidth. And apparently, and of course, I haven't seen it live. I've seen excerpts afterwards on YouTube and elsewhere. This was very interesting, because everybody hoped to see some glimpses of the second movie. So we got a very cool tour. Actually, the way they filmed this was quite spectacular. So it was live. However, you'd think that if it's live, they would just put Peter Jackson in front of a webcam talking. However, that's not at all what they did. They actually produced this almost as a live documentary, where the camera was following Peter Jackson from room to room in this was all in Weta Studios. And so he showed us all these different aspects of the production. And the camera was following him along. He would talk to actors, to other people working there. And it was just very entertaining and very well produced. And despite the fact that they were going to a lot of different locations inside those studio buildings, they did manage to keep the stream going all the time. So they must have rehearsed this multiple times. But it was a huge production. And once I saw afterwards what it turned out to be, I was like, oh, I should have gotten the disc. I want it.
Isn't it brilliant PR? Because
yes.
I know personally a number of people who only bought the Blu-ray disc to get access to this event.
Absolutely. And that's why I didn't want to fall for it. I was like, this is too evil, you know, because I know that I'm going to buy the extended version already. So it just felt too much like what Lucasfilm was doing in the past time and again. And I have like 10 different versions of the Star Wars movies because of this. But once I saw what they did, I actually think that it was worth the admission fee. It was really, really well done and very informative as well. I've learned a lot about motion capture and about the process of script writing. And what I really appreciated was that at one point he was sitting down with one of the actors and they answered questions that people were able to send in via YouTube, and that was a prepared segment. Yeah. But I want to go over, and this is not very long. You can find an abbreviated version of that on YouTube. So let's listen a little bit to parts of those questions, that Q&A session by Peter Jackson, and there are plenty of interesting plot elements in it as well.
Consideration.
Now this, I have to see if I can...
Yes, the answer...
On. How do I go back to the beginning of this? That was actually very cool. We'll get to that later. Let's first listen.
To your question, Stephen, is...
No, wait. How do I... Let me just reset the entire page because he was answering a question from Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
Who is a huge fan.
I had to laugh out loud when he had to... Well, we come to that later.
Yes. Okay, let's start the video from the beginning. Let's see if it works. Here we go.
Some of you very kindly sent in some questions over YouTube, and we've selected a few, and we've pre-recorded our answers because we wanted to actually edit in some clips, and it was the easiest way for us to do that. So you get to see some little glimpses of the Desolation of Smaug. So let's have a look at your questions. Thank you.
Of course, the most interesting part.
Hey, Peter. Chris here. Hope all is well. I've heard it often said by you and the writers that the most difficult chapter in the Lord of the Rings trilogy to craft as a story was the Two Towers. And that totally makes sense. Being the middle chapter, it has no definitive beginning, and it certainly doesn't have a conclusive ending. So I guess my question to you is, how has the process now been going from two films for The Hobbit to three films and finding the emotional arc for this middle chapter, The Desolation of Smaug?
So that's exactly what we talked about as well. So interesting to focus on the emotional story arc and not just on, you know, the story elements as such, but you also want to have some kind of an emotional resolution, which they did very well in the first movie with that ending on the rock there, kind of looking in the distance and having that resolution of the tension between between Bilbo and
Thorin,
which of course is not part of the books, at least not in that way, but I thought it worked really well. So let's listen to what Peter Jackson says to this question.
Thanks.
You're right. I mean, it is complicated to do a middle film. But the advantage is that we have multiple storylines. The first of the Hobbit movies is a fairly linear film. You know, Gandalf leads the dwarves across Middle-earth at the beginning of this adventure. The great thing about the second movie, as it was with the Two Towers actually, is that the story starts splitting into multiple storylines and we can follow different characters as the story intensifies and the stakes go up.
Now, the cool thing is, and you can't see this if you're just listening to the audio of this, but in the meantime, while he's answering this question, they're showing plenty of behind-the-scenes footage of filming of the Desolation of Smaug. And so you see, for instance, Toriel. I think this is the first time that I actually see moving footage of Toriel and of Legolas. And there's some other guy who looks like an elf, but I was a bit, to me, it was unclear who that was. Do you have any idea who that was?
I have no idea. Maybe the guard, one of the guards or something like that.
Yeah, it could just be like a minor character. And you see, I think Legolas's father sitting on the throne. What's his name again? We saw him in the first movie as well. Name escapes me.
Oh, God. Brain freeze.
Anyway. You guys know who we mean. What's interesting that he's sitting on this throne and he's got the same... you see him riding a moose,
Trendwheel.
Right? Who?
Trenual.
Oh, Trenual. You see him on this moose riding away, and now he's sitting on a throne, and the throne is decorated with the same, how do you call those things that are sticking
antlers?
From the antlers? Handlers, right?
Antlers.
Oh, antlers.
Yeah.
So pretty cool consistency there in... So I hope it's not the same animal that he was riding earlier on. There's been a little accident.
Well, they are elves. They don't hurt animals, right?
Yeah, it's probably one of those animals that were killed by an orc or something like that. So and you see some fighting as well. And this is all kind of with green screen in the background. But it is exciting to see and to even hear a little bit of that footage, because we've not seen any Mirkwood stuff so far. Although I do remember that when they were talking about the 3D stuff and how difficult it is to film in 3D with those red cameras, they also showed us a bit of Mirkwood. But it was all green screen, and it was with these vivid colors that they were toned down afterwards. It
almost looked like Wonderland with all those psychedelic colors.
Yeah, yeah. But that apparently was necessary because of the 3D conversion. Let's listen some more to this video.
We actually have another video question for Peter. So
here it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
Peter Jackson, Stephen Colbert, got a question for you about the Elves of Mirkwood, or as it used to be called, Greenwood the Great. Now, here's Mirkwood up here. I want to know whether you're making a differentiation between Thranduil and Legolas, who are Sindar, and the elves who live in Mirkwood, their subjects, who are Avari or Nandor, or a mixture of Avari, Nandor, and Sindar. But they're lesser elves than Thranduil and Legolas in the Tolkien mythos. Are you showing that differentiation, that these elves are members of the Avari who did not heed the call around the shores of Lake Quivenin when Arome came and called them to Valinor? Are you taking that into consideration? Thank you.
I love this.
And I was
this.
Like, wow, yes, I like Stephen Colbert even more now.
100 bonus points. I mean, you totally expect him to do something goofy and not serious, and that he's just kind of making something up. But he actually, he knows exactly what he's talking about.
Yes.
And this is extremely nerdy, geeky question.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there with this big ancient map of Middle Earth, and and he is clearly like, okay, I am a real fan, and I want to have a real answer.
Yeah.
I love this guy. So let's listen to what Peter Jackson says.
Yes, the answer to your question, Stephen, is yes. But I actually have a question for you, Stephen Colbert. Now, you were very kind to invite me onto your show last year, and anyone that appears on the show, Jabez, would you mind just handing me your mug? You know the Colbert one? Could I just borrow that for a second? Anyone that appears on the Colbert Report show gets a free mug, which is nice, but it is quite small. And when I was sitting at the table being interviewed, there was a much bigger mug sitting there. And so I just happened to walk out with the largest size mug. I don't quite know how it happened, but this is the one that was on the table. This is the one that your guests drink out of on air. Now, can you see the difference? That basically the one that you give away for free has got dishwasher proof ink on it. The white ink stays. The one that your guests drink out of, we've had this through the dishwasher maybe once or twice and it just washed away. So my question for you, Stephen, is that the mug that the guests drink out of, do you ever clean it? Do you ever worry about spreading germs?
Yeah, when Peter steals something, he likes it to be of a certain quality.
Well, I didn't steal it, Jabez. I mean, I just happened to find it in my hand when I walked out of the
building. So
the street.
He did steal it.
I don't know how that happened. But it is, I mean, apart from that, it does actually, it does taste quite nice, the tea.
Right. Even if it happens to be secondhand, perhaps.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we do have another special guest, another surprise guest video. So I think we should probably have a look at that, see who it is.
Hello, I'm Billy Boyd. I played Peregrine Took, or Pippin, in the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
That was, by the way, such a surprise and so cool to see him back.
Yeah.
He did a terrific job. I mean, he's one of my favorite characters of the Lord of the Rings trilogy and such an iconic hobbit. Okay, let's listen some more.
Okay. So I'd like an answer to a question. And that question is, in the Fellowship, We went as far as the Misty Mountains in Middle-earth, but here in The Hobbit you go further east. Will we be seeing any new wild lands in the next Hobbit film?
That's a very good question, Billy. Very good. Actually, Billy, if you remember in The Fellowship of the Ring, and you should remember, it was only 10 years ago.
only 10 years ago.
You went through the Misty Mountains, you went through the Mines of Moria, you came out, and then the Fellowship headed south straight away, down the valley to Lothlorien, and then you took the Anduin River down to Amon Hen. So you actually managed very cleverly to bypass the borders of Mirkwood entirely, which was probably a good thing. I can show you a bit of artwork.
By the way, while he's taking that artwork, do you also have that when you hear that description, you immediately picture it in Lord of the Rings Online?
Yes.
And you see the maps, and it's like, oh, I know that region, yes, and the river, yes, of the Anduin, of course.
I've been on a boat on that river as well, yeah.
I've been questing there so many hours / days. So he picks up some of the papers, and there is an interesting detail in this scene, which I'm going to talk about afterwards.
I just pulled out a couple of pieces to give everyone a glimpse of what Mirkwood is going to look like in the movie. So what we've designed, and actually Gus Hunter did this art, is that, you know, it's tiny dwarves in this great big looming creepy forest. I wanted to try to give it a sense of foreboding and grandeur. And it used to be Greenwood the Great, but it has become sick and diseased with this. Fortress of Dol Guldur is like spreading evil through the forest.
It almost looks a little bit like Dagobah. It's very swampy, and you see, of course, a little bit of a prelude on this in the scenes with Radagast the Brown, where, you know, his forest is getting tainted already by the evil that is spreading, and Mirkwood is probably going to be that in overdrive, and we're going to see, you know, what ultimately everything in Middle-earth will become if they don't stop this
yeah,
evil.
Yeah, and it's also interesting to know that the harbingers of this evil are spiders.
Yes.
So
yes.
When the spiders appear, you know that's bad, because spiders are the brood of Ungoliant. And that is that evil spider back way back in the First Age who destroyed helped destroy the trees of Valinor, so the lights.
Yes, and I think that it's a great way to, again, use the first movie to prepare us for what we will see later on. And once we see the whole confrontation with the spiders in the second movie, it won't come out of nowhere. We'll already have seen these spiders more or less at work. So we know already that they are evil, and they're probably going to be back.
Yeah, that's always when there are spiders, and also spiders of that size in movies, I want to crawl behind the seat
yes.
I don't want to see it.
Yeah, no, just like in the Harry Potter movies where these spiders, I'm very much like Rupert Grint's character. Like, I don't like spiders. I don't even like seeing them, not even in a fantasy movie where I know it's all special effects.
It haunted me for days, that scene in The Return of the King, I think it was, that Frodo was fighting those huge spiders. And
so
you saw all the gory details.
And you've never seen the Harry Potter movies, right?
No.
And because there in the second movie with Ron is super scared of spiders, and there are huge spiders all over the place. Anyway, so let me finish this video here.
There's dwarves there, and there's a broken bridge, and they have to figure out a way to cross the stream in Mirkwood.
It looks gorgeous.
So, yeah, I think that's going to be it's going to be an interesting environment. Mm. One of the scarier parts of the story.
Indeed.
Hey, so Jed, thank you very much for
thank you, Peter,
for being and helping me get through this.
You're welcome.
Jabez, thank you.
And I wanted to thank the fans, and of course, Peter, for taking your time out of your busy schedule editing the film to be with us.
Great.
So, very brief Q&A session. And you wonder, that sound effect, that sounds like Smaug. That sounds like a dragon, and we've not heard that either. So, I mean, we've seen him flying, we've seen the explosions at the beginning of the first movie, but we've not heard his roar.
No, but also, of course, the dragon is played by Benedict Cumberbatch.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, of course, in all the big talk shows right now, because he also starred in Star Trek.
Yes.
And I read an article in the Wall Street Journal about where he talks about Smaug.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he was asked, so what's your first encounter and how did you get to know Smaug?
Mm-hmm.
And he recounts that his father was an actor, Timothy Carlton.
Yes.
And when he was very good, when he has been a good boy as a little kid, uh-huh. he would get one or two chapters of the Hobbit read to him by his bedside, by his dad. Cool. And of course, because his father is an actor, he just brought the whole story to life, mm-hmm. While reading to his son. And so for him, for Cumberbatch, this is full circle, because he now plays Smaug.
Nice.
And the necromancer.
Very, very cool. So the first image, actually, that we saw of the confrontation between Bilbo and Smaug was a photo that was published by Entertainment Weekly. You see Frodo lying on a huge pile of treasure. Bilbo. Clearly in Smaug's lair, and I found an article that talks about this a little bit more. The question is, of course, if this battle between Bilbo and Smaug is going to wrap up in the second film. Is that going to be the climax of the second film, or will that carry on to the third movie? Now, according to this article, it says, answering the question, screenwriter Philippa Boyens tells Entertainment Weekly, the dragon is a huge, wonderful, amazing part of the story, but it doesn't end there. Boyens goes on teasing about another massive war in the final chapter, and everyone can suspect that there's a rather large battle in film 3. Now, of course, we know that. It's the Battle of the Five Armies.
Smaug was already dead there.
Yeah, so this leads me to believe that Smaug and his demise is going to be part of the second movie, and that they'll wrap it up there. And then probably the third movie is going to be all about this Battle of Five Armies and both the events leading up to it and, of course, what happens afterwards. And it will all end probably, as we've seen photos of this and even footage in previous updates of the diary, the video diary by Peter Jackson. It will end in the Shire with the return of Bilbo and then the other hobbits selling off his possessions, and then of course another question is, will they leap back to let's say the Frodo's time frame, and will we still see the old Bilbo wrapping the story up? It kind of would make sense to have full closure and also to prepare chronologically as for the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but I don't think it needs it. Not necessarily. It would be just kind of.
Oh, I don't.
Almost
an homage. They will make the same mistake as they made with Return of the King, that you had an ending, and that you had a second
yes.
ending and a third ending, and I was completely miffed when I left the theater. Like that's half of an hour of my life I never will get back.
It's pretty crazy, but we'll see. I mean, knowing Peter Jackson, he doesn't shy away from long extended endings.
No.
And just to know that there's going to be a special edition of this first movie where they will edit back in, I think, what was it, like half an hour or 40 minutes of footage? It's crazy. There's so much.
I wonder what they will do with the storyline with the White Council going to Dol Guldur. If they would, if they will resolve that in the second movie, or if they wait for it to be resolved in the third movie. Because we know, for example, that Elrond wasn't at the Battle of Five Armies.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, the Hugo Weaving, the actor, said he won't be in the third movie.
Yeah. Well, of course, you never really know. They can make changes, and we know that they're this new time of filming, where they call it pickup shoots, which is basically a term that they use for additional material that they have to film, because when they originally conceived the movie, they didn't think that they would need these scenes, but then things changed or the script changed, and they just need extra material. But this could also pertain to like a massive rewrite of the script. Ever since they made the decision to go from two movies to three, they've been changing the script and modifying it considerably to get these story arcs. And we know that originally the first movie was going to end probably with the arrival. It would definitely have the river scene with the barrels, and it would have Mirkwood, and it would end probably with the escape of the dwarves and Bilbo and their arrival at Lake Town. We now know that that is probably going to be like half of the first of the second movie. The fact that they're reshooting so much means also that they might have rewritten the entire third movie and the Battle of Five Armies. So I would take all those comments by actors with a grain of salt. That can all change.
Yeah, what I've heard from articles I've read is that they are now shooting the Battle of Five Armies, and that makes sense because Peter Jackson said in a previous interview that that most of that battle wasn't being shot.
Yes. So I think I'm happy that it's actually a quite long period of shooting, because of course it will be an occasion also for Jackson and his crew to show us a little bit more, to bring us some news. And of course we thrive on Hobbit news. The third movie won't have that. So I wonder how they're going to keep our, the PR machine churning away.
Or maybe some live event if you buy some DVD.
That would not be totally out of the question, I guess. Now, there was a little Easter egg in this entire live event, or actually several. At times, they were hinting at the appearance of Smaug, and you see him walking around, and they, in the background, of course, you get these very blurry glimpses, and then they reveal us that that is not actually what the dragon is going to look like. So they carefully directed and arranged this impromptu live event with also they littered it with small Easter eggs, so of course that people would go back and rewatch it and just
hype
to
it, yeah.
Hype it up. There was one moment where not only the fans of Peter Jackson were sitting up straight and looking at their screen, but also Star Wars fans, because of course we know that the moment that Disney bought Lucasfilm, we got the announcement that new movies would be made. And at the time, I think that there wasn't a definitive answer as to who would direct those movies and who would write the screenplay. There was still a lot of speculation. And of course, there were always the fanboys that and fangirls that were hoping that Peter Jackson would take on this project. And so at one point, and I wonder if it's not in this moment when he bows down, he gets under the table to grab the artwork for Mirkwood, you see a glimpse, and I've seen it later on, you know, in enhanced photos, you see a glimpse of a script, and it says something like Episode 7 Star Wars screenplay by Peter Jackson. And of course that's totally bogus, because afterwards we heard that J.J. Abrams was going to direct, and they already had a screenwriter, and it's not Peter Jackson. But it was just one of those jokes that they put in there. And I love that. I mean, again, we've seen this time and again with the first Hobbit movie as well.
Yeah, I've seen stills when he got that mark from the Colbert show. And then
oh, really?
People were claiming that was scripts of some kind of secret project as well. But I sometimes think that people want to see things and that are not actually there.
Well, and they're playing with that because that's kind of what keeps the fans busy, of course.
Of course.
And I'm looking at one of those photos right now, and I think it's indeed the same table. And so they did this on purpose. And you see this photocopied script, and it has the Peter Jackson in orange stamped all over it. So it's either something to imply that he's involved in the project, or that he's even writing the script, or that he has the script. But at the time, the script wasn't finished yet, and we still don't even know if the script is still being written or if it's already finished. But that's something for another show. By the way, speaking of which, we are going to follow the developments around the new Star Wars movies in a new series on SQPN. So if you're into that kind of stuff, you might want to check out Secrets of Star Wars. And just like The Hobbit, you can find that on our SQPN website. Just type starwars.sqpn.com. starwars.sqpn.com. I'm co-hosting that with Dom Bettinelli, who is a good friend of mine and a huge Star Wars, Star Trek, and Lord of the Rings fan. I didn't know that, but he has read the Lord of the Rings trilogy, I think, 14 or 15 times, according to his blog. So had I known this before, we would have gotten him on the show as well. So we're gonna do Star Wars, and I'm really looking forward to that. And who knows, Peter Jackson might get a cameo in Star Wars.
That would be so funny.
And maybe in
a costume as a kind of alien or so.
Who knows? We know that Stephen Colbert has his cameo, right? He's been begging for it for months, and I think that they actually filmed something with him in the second movie. Details to follow in one of our next episodes.
So the only person that needs a cameo now is a talking professor.
The talking professor. Well, I wouldn't mind getting a cameo either. And you know what? I don't think that's ever going to happen, but I am planning on being very, very close to this production soon. In a couple of months, I will be traveling to Australia and to New Zealand. And this is for our first ever Catholic New Media conference in Melbourne, Australia. But since I am going to travel that long distance from the Netherlands, I planned on spending a second week in New Zealand, and I'm currently planning on traveling the southern island, and that is, of course, where most of both the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit movies are produced. And I want to revisit Matamata as well, because now I've visited it once before after the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but now they've, of course, constructed the set and it's still there. All the Hobbit houses are there. Now, what I want to do, and this might be something very cool to involve you as a listener into this project as well, I want to film a Hobbit documentary while I'm there. And that's all I know for now, so I'm racking my brain. How can I tell a good story? And I want to go to the iconic locations that feature in The Hobbit. I think it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do that. I want to tell a story about The Hobbit, about Tolkien, and so that's going to be very cool. But that's all I know for now. So if people live there in New Zealand, if you're a Tolkien expert and you want to help me make this happen and help me think about what this documentary could be about, or even if you're just a huge Tolkien fan or a Hobbit fan and you have some ideas, let me know. Just post something on Facebook or email me. My email address is fatherroderick@sqpn.com. And this is something I will be talking about increasingly, of course, over the next couple of months as I prepare for this trip to New Zealand. And what I do hope, of course, is that I will have an occasion also to visit Weta Workshop. But again, all that is in the works. So I'll keep you posted.
Did you ever look into taking a red carpet tour? Because I recently read that they added locations to their tours. So you can do a 10-day Southern Island tour or a 6-day Northern Island tour.
Oh, how cool! Yeah, well, that of course is great to do, but it would be rather difficult to film a documentary while being on a kind of more a touristy tour. Mm-hmm. But I know that those tours are very much worth it. I have the advantage of knowing quite a few people in New Zealand who actually are able to drive me around and help me get to all those locations. But yes, there are definitely some great options if you ever travel to New Zealand and you want to go to all these places. Then one of those tours, they're very expensive. That's the problem as well. And I have like zero budget.
Yeah, so maybe people can chip in.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see. I'll give you a code, a special code.
Yeah, we'll film live from the set.
Anyway, it's very exciting though. I'm looking forward to returning to Middle Earth. I love New Zealand. I love the Kiwis most of all, and it's not just the country, which is amazing, but also the people. They're so awesome. Let's take a brief look at all the other news surrounding this movie, and I'm pretty sure that we won't be able to cover everything. But Inge, you've been making a list of some of this of the more recent interviews and stuff. So let's go over your list here.
Yeah, so I already talked about it a bit ago. So the most dominant interview, what I've read, is of the most recent, mm-hmm. is from Benedict Cumberbatch with the Wall Street Journal.
Yes.
And that was on posted on the 13th of May. Mm-hmm. And so he also recounts not only how he got introduced to the character of Smaug by his father, mm-hmm. but he also talks about how this casting for Smaug went. And he says, the conversation with Peter Jackson went like this. He said, do you want to do it about Smaug? And Benedict Cumberbatch said, absolutely I do. That's the great appeal, trying to bring this. And then Peter Jackson said, but. And then he said, so, I'm a biped mammal. I'm not a serpent with tiny claws or legs. I don't have a tail. I can't breathe fire or fly. And the rest of the things that aren't dragon-like about me. But I do think in my imagination, I've got something that might at least push the Weta animation into a direction. And then apparently Peter Jackson say, okay, come down and play.
Cool.
So that's kind of amazing.
Yeah, and it's great to hear that he's actually contributing to not just the voice of Smaug, but also the way in which the dragon will be portrayed. And he's going to do the whole motion stuff as well. And he actually talks about that. I'm looking at the article myself here. He says, I've never been so free. You feel like a tit when you walk onto the stage and there are dots all over your face and your body. But the motion capture volumes pick up every motion and turn it into an avatar. Very, very cool. And then, of course, he says it was a huge challenge. Actually, this is about his role as the necromancer. We don't know much about that either.
He first talks about Smaug, and then he says, they remark, well, yeah, you're also the necromancer. And uh-huh. then he says, yeah, but I cannot really talk about that because the forces in New Zealand will be on my back.
Yes.
So he's kind of shrouding himself in mystery when it comes to the necromancer.
What he does confirm is that he's doing both the voice and the movement as well for the necromancer. And we've seen this kind of ghost-like figure in the first movie, but it was very vague and just not, there was not much to see. So
yeah, but
I hope it's going
to
be better.
Remember that the necromancer is Sauron, and Sauron did not have a bodily form.
No,
anymore.
No, but we did see something that looked like a ghost-like figure. They're going to make him very ethereal. I wonder if they're not going to go the way of the ring wraiths, that he's going to be a bit like that. I mean, they have to give him some appearance. They can't just
make
him invisible.
Yeah, but the ring wraiths are kind of physical beings in this world. They can touch you, and you can touch them. But as far as I know from the books, that Sauron was vanquished. So he cannot take a physical shape anymore.
No,
so
but
that's also why we see him as the eye, the lidless eye.
Yes.
In the Lord of the Rings trilogy, because he cannot appear physically.
Well, but they have to. This is a movie. They cannot make him invisible.
So I also think that's one of the reasons he cannot really go into details, because that's kind of the big reveal. Sauron is the big reveal.
Probably.
So he cannot really talk about that.
I hope it's not going to be too disappointing. I mean, I'm thinking back of the trouble that the creators of the Harry Potter movies had with Voldemort and his depiction, and there have been massive changes from the first few movies to the finale with the big confrontation with Voldemort. I think that they got the right actor for it, but I was a bit disappointed by the fact that Voldemort wasn't as terrifying as I'd hoped. And they tried to kind of underplay him, or the actor tried to just make him menacing by being very contained and very, almost whispering. But to me, it wasn't scary enough. And I hope that they will do a better job with the necromancer.
The whispering works if you're a mom and you want to scare your kid and you're angry. But I think in a movie, you need to do some theater and be very present to be scary.
Perhaps. And it needs to be very different from Schmauk in any way. So it's gonna be interesting. But he's an amazing actor. And just, you know, if you haven't watched the Sherlock TV series yet, that is compulsory viewing because you will see what a huge actor Benedict Cumberbatch is. And I think he will do a terrific job. And he's able to play very different roles. And I think him teaming up also with his fellow actor on Sherlock, with Bilbo, of course. What's his name? Oh, gosh, I'm having a brain freeze today. It's been too long since we've done this show. Anyway, they know each other very well. They play off each other very well. So I think it's going to be both terrifying but also funny.
Martin Freeman.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of Martin Freeman, I was watching the finale of The Office, the American version of The Office, and there was a special documentary about how The Office came about, and they show you The Office in its original form, which was a UK-based show, and it features Martin Freeman. He is one of the main characters in the original Office, and I was like, wow, he's so young there. It was almost like a kid. It's a lot of fun. But I remember seeing The Office in the UK version even before the US version got started, and I loved it. And it's actually, there's a lot of humor in his role. He's great. He's definitely one of the best characters of that ensemble. So again, if you want to see where the roots of Martin Freeman before he became Bilbo, then definitely check it out. And you can still get those on Amazon. Just look for The Office UK. It's very different from the US version. Many people think it's superior. I personally prefer the US version, except for the role of Martin Freeman, who is really fantastic there. So that was
The
interview with the Wall Street Journal. So we know this. Sir Ian McKellen has arrived in Wellington also for a pickup shooting.
Yeah, but he was also being in a picture with Peter Jackson. So yeah, in costume.
Well,
this is
clearly the Dol Guldur stuff, don't you think?
And I think White Council. So they need to do some White Council stuff in the second movie to give it some meat, because otherwise it's kind of weird to have only one storyline. So there's this storyline where the company remember they have been put down on the Carrick by the Eagles.
Yeah.
So now they are going to meet Beorn and and this whole menagerie of animals, and then they hop into Mirkwood. But you have to have a storyline like meanwhile in Rivendell or meanwhile in the what the White Council is doing to make it visually interesting, I think.
So,
because Gandalf wasn't with a company in Mirkwood, he had to go away very quickly because of something he found out about probably Dol Guldur, and had to go off probably back to Rivendell to warn Elrond or something like that.
However, we do know that they've already filmed a lot of the Dol Guldur scenes. I remember in one of those video diaries there was this they were filming outside and it was getting dark and the clouds were very menacing, and Peter Jackson said, well, we're just going to use that in the movie as well. So this could be more of the White Council. I'm also thinking perhaps this could be something of the Battle of Five Armies that he somehow involved.
But he came in rather late, I think, what I remember, from at dawn or something like that.
Okay.
What we have seen in the first movie is his scouting of Dol Guldur. And we haven't seen any footage about what happened after the White Council decides to raid or to launch an attack on Dol Guldur.
Mm-hmm.
So that maybe he could be part of that.
That's another big question mark. How are they going to show that? We don't know anything about that from Tolkien himself. Is this going to be a big attack? Is this going to be small scale? Is this just going to be a few wizards?
He just mentions it in passing, and he doesn't really say that the White Council, only the members of the White Council attacked Dol Guldur, or that they were heading a big army that attacked Dol Guldur, or that they did guerrilla fighting going to Dol Guldur. So we don't know anything about.
So it could be that they're expanding that also for reasons of enhancing. Well, since they moved from 2 to 3 movies, there's more space for this.
Yeah.
So very, very mysterious, and hopefully we'll get some more information about that in the months to come. There was also an interview with Richard Armitage.
Yes, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Did you know he was had an accredited role in The Phantom Menace?
No. Who did he play in The Phantom Menace?
Well, he had an uncredited role, and so they are based. Divine is this an interview with Divine, which is based in Australia.
Okay.
So they say, so welcome back to Sydney. Will you organize a Star Wars reunion while you're here? And then he's kind of a little bit laughing about it. And they say, well, didn't you have an uncredited role in The Phantom Menace? And then he says, I did. I did 2 weeks of The Phantom Menace, and I can't find myself in the film. I've hunted, but I think I ended up as a computer graphic.
So that kind of makes me think that he's probably one of the Gungans, the Jar Jar aliens. Or perhaps a pilot or something like that. That's going to be interesting. I never knew that.
So maybe I now want to watch The Phantom Menace just to see what kind of role Richard Armitage could have.
Well, if he himself cannot discover him in The Phantom Menace, then it's unlikely that we will see him. But very cool.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's so funny that I never would have guessed that he would.
You know, now I'm thinking, why would that be in the interview? Could
well,
it
they
be?
Well, they were based in Sydney and the Star Wars.
How cool would it be if he would be in the next Star Wars movies? I wonder.
He's now big, so maybe.
He is huge. And of course, they cannot just use Mark Hamill and Gary Fisher. They're too old. And Harrison Ford. They might be back, but they're not going to lead. And so you need strong actors, and I'm pretty sure that Disney will not want these movies to fail. So, interesting. Well, keep an eye on it. Imagine Benedict Cumberbatch as Darth Vader.
Well, he could do it. He could pull it off.
Probably not.
Maybe not tall enough.
But... Darth Vader is dead, and he should stay dead. Don't bring him back.
Maybe in a flashback.
Perhaps in a no. So they reminisce about the red carpet premiere in Wellington, where it's very hot. Remember those images? They had exceptionally warm weather that day. But what a great premiere that was. Yeah. I love seeing that.
What I loved is that he explains how he just went into the literature about he read the primary literature and he read secondary literature just to get a grasp of the character of Thorin and about dwarves and the culture. So just immersed himself with everything.
Cool.
And the funniest answer I was at one point they asked, what's the most exciting language you've heard Thorin speak?
Uh-huh.
And then he says, well, I haven't seen it in any other language, but I love to see a Russian Thorin.
A Russian Thorin. That kind of fits with dwarves, Russian.
Yeah, because he
language.
Says, when I was doing all my research and I was looking for a voice sort to get me into the mood for the Misty Mountains song, he listened to a lot of Russian Orthodox church music, all the basses. So he loves to hear Thorin in Russian. He think he would be fierce. And caverns old, we
must away. So apparently, when he was hired for the role of Thorin, he didn't realize that he'd be singing, but he does have a musical theater background. And he says in this interview, I knew that Tolkien had written a lot of songs in the book, and I did read The Hobbit on stage when I was a kid, and it was a sort of a musical. So I was really pleased that they managed to keep some of that great spirit of Tolkien in the movie. I think it was really important. And I agree, and I hope that we're going to see much more singing.
More singing.
They definitely have set a precedent with this song, and it's become so iconic for the first movie because it was used in the trailer as well.
Yeah. I have to say that the Neil Finn also did a version, and I like the one with the dwarf better than Neil Finn because he's kind of a baritone or even tenor. So his voice is way too thin.
Yeah, I agree.
For that music. You imagine a dwarf with a low voice. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree, but that's usually the problem with those songs during the credits. I wish they would stop doing that. I don't care for that. So the interview with him is really worth reading. It's very long also.
Yeah.
But we have to put an end to this episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit because we're approaching the 1 hour mark. But we, of course, will be back very soon with more episodes, and hopefully Dave will be able to join us as well, although he's a busy man, as I've said. In the meantime, check us out on our website, which is thehobbit.sqpn.com. And if you're a new listener and you want to hear us talk about the first movie, especially our review of those first movie, which was very long. I think we did like three or four parts. You definitely want to check that out. Since there is no director's commentary on the current release of the DVDs and Blu-rays, you might want to listen to our review instead, and you'll learn a lot, I think, about the story and about the movie. We will be back probably in 2 weeks from now. However, something might happen. We might get a video update from Wellington soon, and of course, if there is something important to report, we will do that earlier. But we'll try to keep a rhythm of once every 2 weeks and do a new episode. And in the meantime, of course, we will also be producing Secrets of Star Wars, and we're also going to start up Secrets of Disney, which is an analysis of the classic Disney movies. You can look forward to episodes about Dumbo, about The Princess and the Frog, and the classic movie Bambi. And I'm discussing those movies with our resident Disney expert, Deborah Shaben, who has worked with Disney for many, many years. And we have a special guest on each episode. So all that and more is happening over at the website of the StarQuest Production Network. If you're interested in news from our network and hear about new plans and projects, consider subscribing to our newsletter. In the newsletter, we will share any new productions. And, you know, I'm working a lot with YouTube these days. And I'm also contemplating doing a short video series about The Hobbit on YouTube. So, again, if you want to have the first news about that, the earliest notifications of such a series, check out our newsletter over at sqpn.com. Inga, thanks for joining me today. And thanks for all the research. We've not been able to talk about everything, but, well, we'll just keep it for the next time that we are podcasting. We are also on Twitter. It's, what is it, Hobbit Podcast?
Hobbit Podcast.
Hobbit Podcast. And also on Facebook. But Twitter is probably the easiest way to reach us. Again, I welcome your ideas, sponsorship, and suggestions for my trip to New Zealand and my upcoming documentary about The Hobbit. So send me an email at fatherroderick@sqpn.com, and you can also reach our entire crew of this podcast by sending an email to tolkien@sqpn.com. Thanks for listening. We will be back very soon. Until then, God bless.
May the hair on your toes never fall off.
And that too.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.